Today's Monday, November 13, 2023. It's 9:15 a.m. and the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority budget meeting is now in order. I'm going to call the meeting to order. I'm not going to really open with a bunch of remarks today because this is a budget meeting and not a normal or traditional Port Commission meeting. I do want to thank all the students here and thank all of the folks involved in this budget. It's a really great piece of work and a lot of things to discuss today, and I appreciate that. With that, commissioners, any comments or opening remarks?
Moser, you sent the message.
Hopefully this will be a very efficient meeting, which means short-ish.
I got it.
Well, we got a lot of details to talk about, but not a lot of things to approve. So other than one big ticket item. Any other commissioners? Okay. All right. And I think we're going to skip staff reports as well.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And we're going to talk about, I guess, Rich, you are going to talk about, where is Rich, on ESG squared or ES squared G report.
Right.
I just saw the publishing of it. Great. Looks good.
Okay. Good morning. So we're pleased to present the 2023 ES squared G report, which is this one, and it follows kind of a pattern of the one we published in 2021, which is thicker, and that highlighted 72 things the port was already doing and 27 new ideas that we decided to pursue, which we call our sustainability action plan. Last year we gave another update, and so what you see in front of you is the second update to the main report, and this is all based on work we've done with myriad stakeholders, including ILA, including the Healthy Port Communities Coalition, HGAC, the Corps of Engineers, Harris County, and so forth. Last year's update provided information on measuring progress against the plan we set in the year before. In this update, again, the port community continues to make investments in our equipment, our community, and our waterway that will help provide a better and safer and cleaner environment and working situation for our communities. We continue to do this in dialogue with the stakeholders I mentioned, and we're meeting regularly with them to gather inputs as the port continues to lead, partner, and support on different areas. I'm just going to have 10 or 11 updates to kind of a real quick highlights in this document. First, Tim is going to mention, Tim is going to mention sustainability spend. But in addition to what we'll show in terms of what the port spends, we're going after grants in a big way from local, state, and the unprecedented federal funding that's going on. And what we're targeting are things that range from smart ports technology and innovation to large-scale programs to reduce emissions from trucks, additional road improvements, and obviously these grants to support building container wharf and container yard and upgrades to our turning base. One of our action plan focus areas was reducing emissions from trucks and alternative fuels and drayage. Now, the markets for zero emission trucks are growing slowly, but what we are doing this year is engaging and catalyzing a conversation with the trucking communities and the residential communities and the manufacturers and the suppliers of electricity and fuel so that we will be ready when that market does emerge. We continue to transition to cleaner container handling equipment as well. Our RTG fleet, which is increasingly hybrid electric, will be 40% hybrid electric by next year. And every hybrid electric RTG reduces emissions 90% versus the diesel alternative. Operations is continuing to maintain industry-leading turn times for trucks, which maximizes efficiency, minimizes emissions, and is also doing some new innovation things like reducing paper usage at the exit gate, which reduces 30% of paper waste. And across all categories of waste management, we recycled 1.3 tons of plastic, 86 tons of cardboard and paper, 115 tons of tires, 480 tons of scrap metal, 10 tons of e-waste, and 56,000 tons of concrete, 45,000 gallons of oil. Port Houston completed several road improvements, which keep the trucks moving, including widening Port Road, and the Port Terminal Railroad Association reduced its fuel usage by 162,000 gallons in 2023 to date versus 2022, which is about 2,500 tons of carbon dioxide reduced. Project 11 is creating bird islands, marsh habitat, oyster reefs to the tune of about 1,100 new acres of beneficial use areas while employing the cleanest dredges, as you all know. On the social and safety front, Port Houston Support built a community pavilion in Shore Acres, rebuilt a veterans home in Fifth Ward, sponsored several activities with Buffalo Bayou and Galveston Bay Foundation, including beach and bayou cleanups, and of course, engagement with the Houston Parks 50-50 program, adding amenities like splash pads and playgrounds and safer sidewalks for our children and residents. Other activities include more maritime education outreach and continuing to support area education, workforce development, and working with environmental groups with another successful year of our community grants program, plus jobs workshops and next month's second annual Posada. Port Houston safety highlights, including being awarded the Safety Excellence Award by the Western Dredging Association for Project 11, being one of the safest dredging projects in the nation, as well as receiving the U.S. Coast Guard's Rear Admiral Richard E. Bennis Award for Excellence in Maritime Security, while also handling 10,000 calls this year. In terms of governance, Port Houston continues to demonstrate excellence in financial reporting. You'll hear more of that from Tim. Our business equity program graduated 60 participants in our Opportunity U cohorts, and increased enrollment of our SMWBE firms, now numbering nearly 1,700, and more importantly, participation in port spending by those firms was to date through September $65 million, or about 23%. And finally, Port Houston is supporting larger initiatives focused around regional prosperity, including being a supporting partner of the recently announced High Velocity Hub multi-million-dollar project, continuing to push the state of the art in terms of decarbonization in shipping and in trucking with the Blue Sky Maritime Coalition and the Texas Hydrogen Alliance, and continuing presence with multiple entities like the Lone Star Harbor Safety Committee, Greater Houston Partnership, Houston Port Bureau, Western Gulf Maritime Association, Galveston Bay Foundation, Siemens Church Institute, and collaboration with the International Longshoremen's Association. So just in closing, I want to say there's something for everybody, and it came from everybody. This was sustainability is something that every single division participates in. We have established a sustainability roundtable, which meets biweekly, and it has participants from every part of the organization, so that we continue to collaborate, communicate, and make sure that these things happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions?
Comments? Just a quick question. Are we still on schedule to advertise for bids for 1C this quarter?
We are. We already have. They went out on schedule. I think it was the 20th or 23rd.
And plan to award?
Forgot. February or March,
depending on negotiations and dredge availability.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you. His proposals are due on December 6th.
Any other questions? Thank you, Rich. You bet. Okay, let's go to D1, which is public comment. And I think first up is Adrian Shelley, a public citizen. Adrian, are you on? Virtual. There you
yes.
Go.
Can you hear me?
Okay, we can hear you. Yes, we can. Go ahead.
All right. Good morning. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Adrian Shelley, with Public Citizen and also representing the Health Report Communities Coalition. Just wanted to take a moment to comment on the ES Squared G report. I have not seen the 2023 update yet, so we'll take a look at that soon. But within the context of the 2021 and 2022 report, just wanted to make a quick comment. We absolutely appreciate that the port, you know, has this demonstrated commitment to sustainability. There's a lot of actions that it has taken in the last couple of years and commitments that it has made that are providing real measurable pollution reductions for people around the Houston Ship Channel. And we really appreciate that. You know, maybe the most significant one is the hybrid RTGs, right? Which, as you say, you're working toward 40% of that total fleet being hybrid or electric, which is excellent. We also really appreciate the intention to work with the trucking community on the truck issue. We know this is a difficult one because, you know, the port doesn't control those guys, and a lot of them are just, you know, independent owner operators. It's not an easy task, but that's where a significant amount of the emissions are, particularly emissions that are going through communities. So we really appreciate that intention, and we look forward to what's coming there. You know, looking at the 2022 updates and the kind of timeline that is established in the net zero 2050 goal, it's great that there are, you know, carbon footprint reduction targets in there expressed as a percentage, right? And the EPA in its recent guidance on reducing pollutions at ports, which I'll get into in a minute, suggests that, you know, percentage reductions are good, right? That it's a good way to set goals and to achieve them. There needs to be, you know, reporting on those targets, right? So the last goods moving emissions inventory, I want to say, was 2019. I know that another one is coming shortly, and I know that we've got a 55% reduction goal by 2020 and 60% by 2022 to 2025. Those are ambitious targets, which is excellent. We hope that the goods movement emissions inventory reflects that progress. There are things in those goals that, haven't been accomplished. I think that the intention was to purchase only hybrid cranes. I don't think that's happening. I'm honestly not sure, but the goal was by 2020 only hybrid cranes beyond that point. There was a goal, you know, to work towards zero emissions, tractors, pool cars, forklifts, cargo handling equipment. You all discussed that a little bit. Mr. Burns just discussed it. There was also a goal for pursuing solar generation at the port. So, you know, let's put out an RFP on that. That's another excellent goal. I did want to point out that the EPA's office of the Last thing I'll say is the Office of the Inspector General put out a report in September reducing air pollution at ports. They have two recommendations. One, improve the ambient air monitoring network in the region, and two, create measurable performance measures. We'd love to see those things from the port in the near future, and we appreciate the progress that's been made so far. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, next speaker is Cleophas Sharp, Achieving Community Tasks Successfully, or ACTS. Are you virtual or?
He's virtual as well, sorry.
He's virtual as well, okay. Go ahead.
I do not see him on Adrian's own.
No, we already had Adrian. This is Leo Fius.
I do not see him. Unless he's one of those, one of the phones that does have a name on
it. Okay.
Mr. Sharp, are you there?
Mr. Sharp. Okay. If we, if you find him, let us know, and we'll let him speak in a minute. Okay. Let's go ahead and move on. Then we're going to we will allow speaker if we can find him. Okay. We are going to move instead of so we're going to go to instead of e-finance, we're going to move to F operations. And this is important because it relates to
in order, we need to do this in order to make everything else work. So go ahead. We have Jeff. Jeff Davis.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. Chairman's already brought your attention to F1 concerning general rate increase for our tariffs. You might recall last month, a few weeks ago, that I said in advance in public we would be coming back this month seeking a general rate increase. And our terminals are driven by three tariffs, 14 for Barber's Cut, 15 for Bayport, and Tariff 8 for all others. In Tariff 14 and 15, those increases are that we're seeking that approval for are really driven. This body's already voted on those because there's a Marine Terminal Services Agreement that pushes increases to CPI annually, and we use July to, as the month to measure the previous 12 months. So in July, it was 3.2%. So tariffs 14 and 15 are pretty much already been approved by this body, but the remaining tariff items in 8, we're looking to align them with the containment facilities and do 3.2% there as well. So I ask for approval for F1. If there are no questions, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
The motion?
So moved.
Second. Okay. Any questions or comments? Well, I'm glad it's 3.2 and not what it was the year before. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Okay, thank you. Okay, let's then go back to finance, and we're going to hear from Mr. Finley and his team.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioner. Thank you for your time, especially a Monday rainy morning. Thank you very much, staff and guests. Please don't hesitate to interrupt me. I'll go as quickly as I can, but hopefully not too too quickly. A couple opening comments on the slide there, really the middle two. The operating budget, as a reminder, does not include Harris County property tax receipts. Those are used exclusively to support debt service on the GO bonds. That said, of course, it does include the net revenues generated by the Port Authority to service our own revenue bonds outstanding. Third bullet is a capital plan we're asking for approval. It is approved in total at $745 million. We'll break that down in a moment. But of course, we'll bring back individual projects, expense, and capital projects to you of anything greater than 100 as we go throughout the year. All right, by way of overview on slide 5, if you're following on the page, as you see, projecting revenues next year of $584 million, up just over 2%, driven largely by, again, modest growth in the container unit volumes and CPI and other things contributing. Salaries and benefits, again, as you'll remember, and we'll show you half of our total cost envelope is represented in salaries and benefits. We're moderating our headcount growth as we go into 2024, as you look at that compared to 2023. But nonetheless, growth in salaries and benefits, as well as a continued focus on total rewards for employees. That means we have budgeted a performance-based merit program in the coming year, a corporate performance-based incentive program in the coming year, and some other things. So that continues to grow, if you will. Other spending increases related to operating capacity growth. That's headcount in the maintenance shops, parts and supplies to sustain the fleets of ship-to-shore and RTG cranes that we have. They do a fantastic job at that, I might add. As well as we have a number of longer-term strategic initiatives that we're funding in the coming year. We'll talk a little bit in more detail on the coming slides. So that's raising some expense as well, and continuing our support, of course, for community and stakeholder engagement activities. We have a robust capital plan of over $600 million for 2024. That's for the PHA capital. And then you see reference to Project 11, awards at 133. The bulk of that we just talked about, 1C coming in the first quarter of next year. Throughout the five-year plan, really, and certainly in 2024, we have a very stable liquidity position, meaning cash and credit position throughout the five-year plan that we'll review briefly in a couple of slides. All right, cargoes first, left side, container terminal units. Overall, about a 1% growth overall in units. You can read the details there. We've got export loads increasing just over 3%. We've had a fantastic year in 2023. Those export loads are up through October about 11%. On the other side, import loads softening just under 3% next year projected. Again, those are down about 6% this year, but based on what we can see in other market and industry signals, looking to have some recovery, but still some shrinkage, if you will, in that import loads next year. Steel tonnage, a solid year this year at 4.5 million tons, growing a pinch 3%, both at our terminals and lease terminals for next year. That, as I mentioned in the notes, we are seeing some positive news on Texas rig count, if not U.S. rig count, projecting to be strong next year. So that helps support that steel number. Dry bulk tonnage, many of you know, a couple of commodities called out here on the inbound side, cements, aggregates, and things. Some of that happening, as you know, just here at the south side. On the export side, grains and things coming out of the grain elevator. So we thought that'd be a nice call out. Those are at least facilities, those tonnages. So they're crossing our docks, and I think it's worthy of a call out. A little bit of an increase looking next year. Everything left over then, other general cargoes, you see a decrease, less than 100,000 tons there projected. A lot of that's coming at the conclusion of the auto lease here at the Turning Basin next year. Which we do have some opportunity to backfill that capacity as well coming in the coming years. So, all right, income statement. We'll start easy for the marketing people in the room. A graphic view of the P&L. If you look at the right side, again, revenue, operating income, and net operating cash flows. Again, you see the 584 growing about 2%. In the middle, you see the net operating income, the oil or blue color, down about $26 million year over year. Almost half of that is depreciation. We can talk about that in a coming slide. And in addition, about $12 million of salaries and benefits. We talked about most of that operations, some of that G&A, and then other spending for the initiatives we talked about in the coming year. Then that sort of results, excluding depreciation, then you get cash flow, which is down about, projected to be down about 6%. Into 2024. I'll talk just briefly about the center of that 2023 looking a reforecast or a forecast of 571 for the year. I think we'll probably beat that from $5 to $10 million. Cash flow 268. I expect us to come in favorable to that number. So it looks like we're going to finish the year in a good position.
Tim, what was the just gross revenue in 2019 pre-pandemic?
Oh gosh,
you know that number?
I'd have to calculate it in my head, but obviously
less than 500. Less than 584.
Oh, clearly.
Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. The point I want to make is that the 655 and the 571 are kind of aberrational numbers because of the reloading of the supply chain and all the rent that we rental income that we. That we earned as a result of being the cheapest place to store cargo.
That's right.
And we of course changed that a bit to try to be less right. cheap or less inexpensive for the cargo owners. But still, when you look at if you take the pandemic out of this 651 and prior,
yes.
we're still substantially up from 2019. I think that's really important.
You're correct.
Important to take out the noise, even though it was like. Deafening, obviously, with the pandemic, but we're still on really good track when you take out those unusual.
It's an excellent point. If you, for round numbers, what we use in 2022 to restate that would be about $100 million associated with that extended dwell time.
Tom, you got that?
We don't need the exact number.
Yeah,
I just want to broadly.
It was 392.
392
revenue in 2019. Yeah. Yeah. Was a record year at that.
Yeah, and that was a record year and with double-digit growth in the prior year. So I think that the idea, clearly what's happened is we went up big time, reset the bar, and so we shouldn't feel too bad about a 12% decline in revenue for 23 and a 2% increase for 24. Relative to the historic growth rate
that
we've had. I mean, it's still amazing beyond belief, even when you take the pandemic aspect out. And what it really shows is that we've expanded our long-term base business during the pandemic that is not going away.
That's right.
Right? And I think 30% higher than 2019, just on our
30% higher.
Yeah, I think that's a testament to a couple things. One is the investments that we've made.
be able to handle that capacity. Because
correct.
What happens is, if you don't invest in the future, you don't have the capacity then to handle it when you do get the work, right? And so, and we're going to talk about this in a minute. Where you've got a $750 million
correct.
Capacity expansion capital budget for the next 5 years, and, yeah. and it's the same kind of situation where we're going to be building excess capacity so that we can handle the work coming in. So that's number one. Number two is we have the labor.
Yeah.
We are able to bring labor in and to create. If you can't hire the people to actually make it all work, because it is a very people intensive business, then you're in trouble too. So both the investments in the infrastructure and the investments in the people have been what's allowed us to create this incredible opportunity
sure.
for us today. And I just want to broadly make sure
yeah.
we all recognize that, because sometimes when you see down 12 and oh my gosh, your net operating income in 23 is down 25% and it's down 6%, and that's like a
yeah.
you know, humans tend to look at graphs like down, oh my God, that down is like not good.
Yeah.
Well, it's normal because the previous was unusual and unique and probably not going to be repeated, hopefully,
yeah.
in the near term.
True.
So
true.
I think that's really a good just to kind of start this discussion.
Thank you, Rick.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
All right. I'll mercifully not take you through all the numbers on this page. The few circles, if you'll follow along the right side, of course, looking at the comparison to 23 to 24, we talked about the 2% decline in revenue. Margins declining again, half of that sort of on depreciation we talked about on the investments we've made in capacity. The other half being, operating spend associated with that capacity, be that headcount, parts and supplies, and. G&A is up about $10 million in this budget, largely around $7 million of that associated again with strategic initiatives that we intend to fund next year, and then some headcount growth as well. I want to call your attention, it's not visible at all on the screen, I'm sorry. In the 2024 column, other non-operating income net, almost $97 million we're expecting next year in terms of other. What that is, really two big pieces, interest income on the port funds. We're investing those very carefully, but very short term to take advantage of the interest rate environment in the short end of the curve. That's about $52 million next year. And then on top of that, to the point of the prior conversations, $38, $39 million of grant monies expected to come in 2024. Quick shout out to the grant manager, Bridget Elmore, and Angelina Carranza, who do a fantastic job of administering and managing those grants on all of our behalf. So thank you for that. And so net total cash flow for next year, the very bottom line there, which is not legible on the screen, just under $300 million for 2024. Go into a bit more detail on revenue and expenses. First, a quick look at the makeup, the left side of your page, now you're looking at total revenue, you see the makeup of operating 584 plus non-operating of 92. Again, that's the non-operating is interest income and grant money's coming in. So overall inflows we're looking at just under 700 million, growing 5% from 23 to 24. The mix of business really unchanged, sort of. Containers are generally in the closer to 78-80% of our revenue, but because of that growth in non-operating next year, it squeezed the container share just a bit. Likewise, turning basin is normally 13-15% of revenue. So it just gives you a view of the portfolio of our revenues in the coming year. A very simple bridge taking you from 571 expected this year to the 584 for next year. Obviously, the containers are the big mover. 3% increase in container revenues, that's units and the CPI that you've just approved. Turning basin down $2 million or 3% into 2024. A lot of moving parts there. Clearly, the auto business leaving us has an impact on lease revenues and some tonnage that we've yet to backfill, but I'm confident we will. Steel, as we talked about, is coming up a bit, so that helps offset that increase. And then some other revenues moving around a bit. So that gives you the bridge from this year to next. Expenses, we'll take a little bit more pause here. Again, the left side is total operating, total expenses, excuse me. The 428 is your operating G&A expense profile for next year. And on top of that, non-operating expenses, that is almost entirely the interest expense on our revenue-backed debt. The pie, no new story here. Again, as you see, the big blue, around half of our costs are associated with both PHA and ILA labor costs, salaries and benefits and things. The orange slice to the left, there's the depreciation on our capital assets. So human assets, capital assets, you know, you're looking at 70% of our outflows. The discretionary gray bar to the left is where you're going to see a lot of that strategic spending on various projects. I'll give you a couple of words on that coming up next. But again, just gives you a view of where the other dollars are flowing for next year. Okay, the bridge, forgive me, is a little detailed. I hope you've got it in front of you in the booklet. Expenses growing at 10% to $428 million next year. On the right side, what we've done is separate operating expenses from G&A expenses. Operating is about 83% of the total of our expenses. 350 some odd million of the 428 is represented in operating expense. Again, depreciation and amortization, that includes amortization of maintenance dredge, PHA berth maintenance dredge specifically, that we amortize over a brief period. And then the depreciation on Wharf 6, on Wharf 6 cranes, a number of RTGs, other terminal upgrades, et cetera. So depreciation, a non-cash item, but an expense item for us, is a big mover for 2024. PHA and ILA salaries and benefits combined, that's a pretty well split between the two, driven by volume.
And again, how fast do you amortize the maintenance dredging?
2 years. That tends to be our cycle for needing to repeat the bridge. Yep, so that's over two. Again, salaries and benefits split fairly equally between PHA and ILA. You know, again, some volume growth, but also equipment to manage and maintain and staff as needed. Maintenance and capacity support, repeating myself, but again, now you're looking at parts and supplies and drives and all those things to support the fleet that we have there. Some safety programs, signage initiatives, environmental programs, dust suppression. Insurance remains a challenge for us, a pretty hard market. We think is going to continue into next year. So we've got about a 14% increase in our PNC insurance plan for next year. Channel costs and engineering services, security contracts, other things that support our business, of course, all those things we're seeing increases next year. Bottom half, G&A, looking at about $70 million, $72 million, 15, 17% of our spend. Big item this year is our strategic goal-related spend. We will begin implementation of the next generation ERP platform next year. Costs you see here are specific to the platform subscription costs. Once you start working on it, you've got to start paying those fees associated with it. The cost to implement, which is coming before you as an item in December, those are capitalized costs. So they go onto the balance sheet and be amortized.
What's the timeline on that implementation then?
I think we're looking at 3 years, 3 to 5.
24 to 36 months.
24 to 36 months. So a host of strategic items. I'll give you a quick glimpse of that in a couple of slides as well. Salaries and benefits, there's about 15, from memory, 15 new headcount we're looking for G&A, and then a host of things that all sum up to around $1 million, giving you our expense increase for next year. As we've done in the past, I just want to call out that the Promotion and Development Fund, which was approved by this body in September, is all rolled here into the budget and is represented in the numbers you've seen. Fairly flat on the bottom, but if you break that down, you have increases in organizational partnership, you have increases in the maritime education and a few other items are increasing. The offsets kind of covering that up and making it look flat. But again, this is the budget that was approved. We may have trimmed it a bit if I took out a little travel or other items, but nonetheless.
Tim, on the Parks and Green Space Program, remind me that $580,000 is the final
$2 million that we approved. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So after 2024, we have no forward budget for parks and green space, right? So that's probably something we ought to think about in 2024 is how do we want to think about 2025, 2026, you know, to reload that program. Because I think the community loves it, obviously, for lots of different reasons. I think our commission likes it as well.
Very good.
Okay.
A quick preview of strategic goals reference, again, the fact that this is causing some incremental spend in our budget next year. I will say maybe a couple times, Jessica and our team will return in December to give you a full briefing and get your, I suppose, approval on the 2024 strategic plan. The pillars remain the same. These are done in five-year increments. People, infrastructure, partnership, stewardship. You see the descriptions, foster organizational culture and prepare future leadership. Those are the corporate level goals for each of those pillars. The fine print there is what supports, in fact, the spending that we've asked for next year with regards to various programs, including planning for future container terminal, the strategic plan for 2025-2050, capacity plan, and a host of others. So we won't go into these in detail. Jessica will bring this back to you next month. As we've done in the past, we include, and was referenced, a carve-out for sustainability. I think it's important to note that in some regard, the entire $1.2 billion of expenditures and appropriations we're asking you to approve, that entire amount is sustaining the incredible contribution the Port Authority makes to local economy via jobs, local, regional prosperity. So it's a sustaining engine that we have here. But within that, there is over $200 million of spend linked to ESSG, split left and right, programs and initiatives, expense items running down the left side, and then more the capital asset investments that we're making. Charlie and I had a conversation this morning that so much of Project 11, and certainly 1C, is really a safety benefit to vessel operators and owners, and could well be down in safety, but nonetheless, electric ship shore cranes, hybrid RTGs, and beneficial use site, which is beneficial across a lot of different avenues.
A quick question on a comment was made in our public comments about hybrid cranes, mm-hmm. and how we, I think the question was like whether we are buying 100% hybrid cranes, and my understanding is that all our new equipment we're getting state-of-the-art hybrid and or fully electric, like ship shore cranes are electric, right?
That's correct. I don't follow anything to add there.
No, that's correct. State-of-the-art hybrid RTG cranes and continue on fully electric ship shore cranes.
Okay, so in this budget, on page 19, says diesel electric. I assume diesel is not like exactly right.
It's still a
type of electric. Is
yeah. Not glad to hear that.
FPSs are electric.
FPSs are electric, right? Not diesel.
Sorry, that's a faulty copy and paste.
Good catch.
Yeah, good catch. I got it. It was a test. Yes, sir. That's right. These are fully electric. Thank you, Rick.
Okay, great. So all of our cranes are either hybrid or electric. And any replacements we're doing are hybrid.
That's right.
And there was also a comment about 40% of our fleet was hybrid today or something like that.
I don't know that number.
By end of next year.
End of next year, 40% of our RTGs are going to be hybrid. Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Quick look at headcount. Rather busy slide. Extreme left, we ended 2022 with 740 active employees. September, we ended at 773 with about 60 open positions. And we're asking for 38 new headcount in this 2024 budget. Information on the right, really the 60 open positions, 10 of those were approved for 23 that have been re-justified to move forward into 2024. 50 replacements is a pretty healthy number, about half of those coming in operations and maintenance positions. Jessica could speak more intelligently than me, but yes, it does continue to be a challenging employment market out there for us. You see in the box the split of the 38 heads. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
How come you think we're having such a hard time of hiring people from the outside?
It's really been across the board. You know, we do have some very specialized positions, and so in some cases it's very challenging to fill. I'd say particularly when it comes to, like, crane technicians, as well as IT professionals has been challenging. We've seen some areas of improvement lately, particularly when it comes to IT. I think as the market's being more flooded with capacity coming into it. But it's been a challenge. And so we're finding some new and creative areas to hire. So we're making new partnerships with different schools, looking at more upstate options to relocate people. But I'm not, it's continued to be a challenge.
Are you seeing any effect yet on the high school programs in the area feeding the pipeline a little bit?
We are. You know, we do, for most of our positions, it does require some more experience. We are going to be part of the headcount includes the apprentice program, so continuing that program, which has been very effective. So we will continue to look at that. And we are making some partnerships, too, with some new schools next year, including logistics schools, as well as some new maintenance programs, too. So we're continuing that. We've done a lot of job fairs and outreach, and we've seen success with those, which is not as quick as we want.
So is there any ideas or any numbers to say what the difference and the cost is that we're competing with the outside?
It varies by position. I will say, you know, for some of our maintenance programs, it's been challenging competing with oil and gas industry. As always, you know, when they're on an uptick and they're paying more, you know, we don't rise up to the highest levels as possible. We still offer competitive salaries, but we've seen, for example, some of our crane techs are going to like pipe fitting roles, where they're making quite a bit more, probably not as much of a stable industry because, you know, it's going to go back down at some point. But we are taking a close look at that actually as we speak as the market comparison. We feel confident with all of our other positions, but I would say with some of our skilled craft positions, we're seeing us training behind a little bit.
Because I know the crane techs, we've been short the whole year or 2 years or 3 years. It's hard to get.
Yes.
So we might need to look at that, Mr. Chairman. I mean, we can't keep going and not have the folks to do the work.
And that's something we're looking at as we speak, actually. We're pulling from the market leader.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, last section is capital and liquidity. Quickly, an overview is recommended. We've got an overall plan of $745 million broken into these categories. Strategic, largely new capacity, right? And of course, at Bayport, recapitalization in the green slice of pie. Barber's Cut and Turning Basin as well. So a nice balance of new development and ensuring these public docks here are functional for our customers. Project 11, we mentioned $133 million. You can see, at least on the book in front of you, Segment 1C is the big one to go. Another piece of Segment 4, I believe that's the East Clinton placement area. Segment 5 and some continued pipelines. Then the last two bullets, really operations, business support items through channel dredging projects, and again, a host of other remaining projects. A lot of numbers on this page. If you'll just focus on the right, we'll talk in a second about Bayport, Barber's Cut, channel development 7.6. That's again, maintenance dredge for PHA berths, Turning Basin terminals, I'll show you in a second. Maintenance is a host of gear, largely focused on RTGs with festoon systems, maybe head blocks, I'm not certain. A lot of items there in the maintenance area. Real estate, some opportunistic commercial buy perhaps next year that we hold a placeholder for. Other commercial prep for Greens Bayou is in there. Port security, we'll have an award of a new PCC building, badly needed, I think we can say. is about 14 million of that 17 million you see. Other is the, as in the note at the bottom, we have the Sam Houston boat, which I believe will be brought to you in the first quarter of next year. Pavilion redevelopment, technology items, and then some construction management related items as well. Quick look at Bayport, if you could follow the bouncing ball there. Easier to see on the written page.
Hey, Tim, where's your office building in this budget?
We awarded that.
It's already awarded, so it's not in the budget. I got
that's right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Bayport, if you can see the circles, in October we are slated to award both CY8 and CY1 South. The cranes for Wharf 7, I believe, is a May award, and other items there as we complete. You see the design of Wharf 8 in 2025. Construction of 8 and 9 today sit in 29 and 31, respectively, just out of our five-year plan, including breakwater and dredging off that east end. BCT, similarly, a bit of a picture of many colors here. Container yards sorely needed for that terminal. You see 6 and 7 are slated to go, I believe, October from memory. I'm not certain of that. Both awarded, but we'll execute that construction in segments so we don't lose production capacity there. Cranes for 4 and 5, and then other odds and ends for Barbara's Cut.
Let me back up just a second for Bayport. Is that it? I mean, if 8 and 9, is that it for our space?
8 and 9 is it for that space. And it'll be by early 2030s for Wharf 9.
We still have to build Wharf 1, too.
Yeah, that's true. Wharf 1 is over there.
And in 2026.
Yep. Turning Basin, a new map we tried for this year. To orient yourself, you see the executive office building there. It's not that large, but that is just to give you a placement, 610 running. So to the left side, 916 City Dock, 2021, all those are sitting in the plans for this year. Manchester 2 and 3 slated to go as well. Next year, just to continue again those productive assets. Okay, liquidity, looking at cash on page 28. Again, a lot of numbers. Top left, beginning in 2023 with just over $860 million of cash and investments. Go to the center of 2024. The circle is just reminding you now that that's a full year of debt service on our revenue. Backed bonds of just over $45 million, principal and interest cash. You can see them just below that, projected to end 2024 with around $575 million of cash. If you drop to the lower section, is Project 11 cash projections. If this, these models indicate by the end of 2025 that we will have pushed out all of the cash that we have both borrowed and contributed here for the acceleration of Project 11. Page 29 is award capacity. This again is ensuring the commission has cash and credit available to award all new projects that are listed that we talked through. The only point of note there in 24, the circle around 315 is we're seeing mathematically a need for additional award capacity. That would be a credit that we go pursue sometime in the middle of 2024, mid to late 2024. Just to the right of that, you see the expiration of the credit we have for Project 11, which was a fantastic vehicle, but we'll be done. So we will relinquish that credit sometime in 25. And that, with the summary, stable outlook next year, moderate growth in cargoes, relying on continued operational excellence across the full enterprise, moderate container unit growth expected next year, consistent trend on steel imports, Capital plans continue for our container capacity expansion, general cargo facility redevelopment, all of which provide efficient growth opportunities for our customers and job creation for the local economy. And proverbial bottom line, with cash, liquidity position appears sound through both 2024 and for the 5-year. So with that,
do we have a motion to approve the budget?
Second.
Any other questions or comments? All fair to say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're going to give us an update on the 5-year?
Very quick. 5-year. No vote is required, just a review. Gray bars represent the revenue outlook, sort of averaging around 3% in the coming year. We bounced that against a variety of market sources. Wells Fargo has some numbers out there around 2%. State Comptroller's Office around 3.5%. Ibis World is one that I like to look at. It's also right in the sub 3% growth over this time frame. So we feel like there's some a reasonable, well, there's uncertainty in the markets and some reasonable modest growth. From a cash perspective, that's the taller blue bar coming in.
Jim, could you describe how this budget includes the Project 11 fee reimbursement?
It does. We have those user fees beginning in the middle of 2025, roughly April to be specific. And again, those money is intended to be fully applied against the debt service.
So our debt service is $45 million roughly on average, right?
Correct.
And what's the fee, 12-month annualized fee, say in 2026? Compared to the debt service?
Yeah, on an annual basis in the $30 million range.
$30 million.
You know, all the variables will continue to move in that calculation until we're done, but
okay.
That's the number. Yep.
Thank you.
Mr. Sharp's on. So when
you're
finished. Okay. Oh, okay. Great.
I'll go ahead. Yes. Again, a lot of numbers on the 5-year P&L.
When you're done.
Thank you.
Yeah, sorry.
The 5-year P&L, I'll just call attention to the margin rates. Again, that's to Rick's point of we are very intentionally putting in capacity just ahead of demand so that we are attractive to carriers and have that that capacity ready and available for us. That causes a bit of decline in margins. G&A, we've held fairly flat. We've allowed for people total rewards increases through that time frame, but have held relatively constant on other spending items. So proverbial bottom line, you see they're generating just over $300 million of total cash flow through the period, including, of course, paying debt service on our revenue-backed bonds and supplemented by upcoming user fee payments. The capital, fairly simple, Rick, over 5-year periods, total awards of $1.9 billion. For PHA, that's $1.7 billion as we continue to, again, expand container capacity and maintain these important assets at the Turning Basin. I'll go to slide 37, which, again, is cash through the 5-year horizon. In the middle there, ending available PHA operating, you can see over $200 million in general, holds fairly static until we get to the next container terminal discussion and certainly Project 12. So appears to be a solid liquidity position into the 2030s, if you will. And of course, at the bottom, as I said, models indicate we should be through with the cash associated with Project 11 sometime in 2025. And with that, thank you. I do, before we stop, I want to thank the financial planning team who does actually the real labor and not me. That's our financial planning director, David Zottenhow, and our budget manager, Katrina Stewart, and our planning analyst, David Dupree. So again, thanks to all of them that do the real work and all staff who put together a lot of numbers and a very responsible plan, we think. So thank you. That's all we have.
I think as we approach the holiday times and you look at this 5-year plan of $1.9 billion worth of investment into the future, the port is the gift that keeps on giving.
This is true.
And as you look forward and you see that cash flow generating annually to be, we'll have plenty of cash flow to invest in the future, even beyond 2028, because it's really all about investing in capacity, which will require more people and require more goods to be pushed through our system, which ultimately creates the goal of prosperity and jobs for the region overall. So very, very good projections, and I do want to thank the staff and the teams for focusing on these numbers and making sure that we do, in fact, have, you know, a very bright future.
Yeah, just echo, and I told Tim that I was going to sit here and be quiet because he covers this very well, and I just want to, it's well done across the board, your staff, you know, everybody is engaged across the organization, managing our operational expenses, keeping an eye on this capital that we're talking about. That's the constant, you know, trying to figure out exactly, you know, what our growth is going to be is challenges at times. But I just wanted to, you know, even for next year, and it's difficult enough, but we lean on a lot of indicators out there from the retailers that are giving their projections, trying to think, gauge the things that we're exporting. So many challenges that we found before the last couple of years. There's going to be more coming. You know, you talk about the Panama Canal. You talk about all these other things. We're prepared to address those quickly and nimbly as we always can. And you mentioned, too, getting on top of this headcount. That's a priority for us, attracting, retaining the talent that we need to move forward. And, you know, it's just well done, and it's fluid. Capital's in fluid. Business is fluid. You look at these projections, you know, you go back 10 years, growth rates, 5 or 6%, you know, is that going to hold? And that includes 30% growth over the last 2 years. So we'll keep our eye on that and manage that accordingly. But, again, appreciate the work that this team does. We keep a constant eye on what's going on in our industry, and it changes rapidly. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Commissioners, any other questions or comments?
No.
Okay, great. Well, let's go ahead and then, Mr. Sharp, are you on? We'll give you your 3 minutes.
Yes, I am on. Am I coming in loud enough?
Yes, you are. Absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you. My name is Cleophas Sharp. I'm a board member of ACTS and a representative of the Healthy Port Communities Coalition. I heard several times you mentioned about the fact that the need for qualified employees. We know that from past experience and statistics that most people move to where the jobs are, or they already live near where they're going to work. So I want to start by by commending and acknowledging that we have come a long way in our relationship and communication with Port Commissioners, and we thank you all for that. But we believe we still have a ways to go. It is our understanding that the port was not awarded the EPA grant expansion of the port. We believe that it may have been because of the lack of adequate community inclusion. And we stand united and ready to support the port endeavors, but we need to be reassured that with supporting evidence that this expansion project would be mutually beneficial for both the port and all the port communities impacted. To that point, I'd like for you all to consider and picture yourself and your families living in our neighborhoods where asthma, lupus, COPD, cancer, are in the highest percentile in the nation, and consider the impact of these carcinogens in the air that your children and grandchildren are breathing as they go about their daily lives. We acknowledge that the port is not singularly responsible for all air pollution that contaminates the air that we breathe, but the port does have some responsibility for its decisions, which have direct and indirect impacts in our communities. We sincerely want to be able to support the port in totality, but not at the expense of our future, our children or grandchildren's future. We encourage the port to become more inclusive and involved with the communities to ensure that the port expansion moves forward, but not to the detriment of our communities and our lives. Let's not work as adversaries, but we want to continue to work together to ensure that the Port of Houston becomes environmentally friendly by setting the EPA standard for all ports in the nation. This step alone, we believe, will position the Port of Houston as the model for all advanced development considerations by EPA, Department of Transportation, and Clean Energy for years to come. More so, we want our children to live in neighborhoods that are environmental breeding grounds for medical complications and death in future generations, just as I know each of you would for your children and grandchildren. I thank you for this time you allowed me to speak and represent our Healthy Port Community Coalition. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Sharp. We appreciate your time today as well. Okay, we will now, I think we have a special, are we having an executive session?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So go ahead.
Should I go ahead with the
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it. Let's
move. Okay. It's now 10:15 a.m. Board Commission of Port of Houston Authority, Harris County, Texas, will convene in a closed meeting as permitted by the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct private consultations with attorneys, including consultations regarding Port of Houston Authority being Louis Dreyfus, Houston Export Elevator LLC, Texas, and PHA Property LLC, which are real estate, based terminal property, negotiations for 7th, employment evaluation of public employees and security related matters. Fourth Commission will reconvene in public session after closed meeting.
Okay, so it is 10:34 a.m. Monday, November 13, 2023. The Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority is now back in regular session. Do we have anything to talk about?
Yes, sir. The Louis Dreyfus settlement. I move to authorize the Port Authority to settle its claim against Louis Dreyfus Company, Houston Export Elevators, LLC, on the terms discussed in the executive session, and authorize the executive director to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Ayes have it. Thank you. Motion passes. Any other closing remarks, commissioners, or any other discussion?
I don't think so.
Great job. Good meeting.
Okay, great. So I just want to make, I just want to say happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Our next meeting is on December the 12th, and we will look forward to seeing everybody there. So thank you. The meeting is adjourned.